And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, March 31st. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, all the information required to take action. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, April 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Sand Hill Bluff Wilder Ranch State Park in Santa Cruz. Thousands of years ago, California Indians moved into an area just north of Santa Cruz hunting tule elk, deer, bear, and shoreline fur seals. An ancestral Ohlone people gathered and stayed in this area called Sand Hill Bluff. In 2005, the Trust for Public Land, a national nonprofit land conservation group, along with the California Department of Parks and Recreation, the Department of Conservation, the Coastal Conservancy, Caltrans, and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, acquired the 154-acre Sand Hill Bluff property. When Sand Hill Bluff is eventually open to the public, visitors will be able to visit the impressive and ancient archaeological site left behind by the Ohlone. The preservation of this area opens the door for research into the past residents of this part of the California coast. According to State Parks archaeologist Mark Hilkema, Sand Hill Bluff is an outstanding archaeological site with a history that goes back almost 5,700 years. The focus of the habitat restoration team will be on removal of invasive non-native ice plant on the inland side of the coastal bluffs. And due to parking constraints and the number of folks anticipated at the project site, please meet at the Wilder Ranch State Park and we will carpool. Please try to arrive by 9:50 in the morning on Saturday. We will plan on leaving heading to the project site at 10 a.m. To get to Wilder Ranch, take Highway 1 west through Santa Cruz and continue north to the turnoff on the left-hand side for Wilder Ranch State Park. Watch for the sign indicating the left turn. When you get to the kiosk, let the person there know you are volunteering as a habitat restoration person, and they will give you a parking pass. Meet them at the interpretive sign by the bathrooms in the parking lot at 9:50 on Saturday. Once again, that's Saturday, April 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., please meet at 9:50 for carpooling. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. The program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Please bring your gloves and your water. If you need further information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. You can email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net. Or you can visit their website at www.cruzcnps.org. That's www.cruzcnps.org. And the Elliott Rainforest Climbing Camp will be held April 19th through the 24th in Oregon. Did you ever dream of exploring the forest canopy, sleeping in the trees, or dangling from bridges? Would you like to join Blockadia or create Blockadia in your own hometown? Join us in the Elliott Rainforest from April 19th through the 24th for a week of intensive training and climbing in the backwoods of so-called Southwest Oregon. The Elliott Climb Camp will be on Coos Land in the Elliott State Forest near Reedsport, Oregon. The Climb Camp is open to beginners and seasoned climbers alike, though we'd like first-time climbers to commit to the whole week so you can get the full range of skills you need to dangle with safety. We're asking for online registration so that we can send you directions and make sure we have enough gear for everyone. You're welcome to use a nickname if you don't want people to know everything about you. Their registration is being capped at 25 to 30 participants, but if you are an experienced climber and can help with basic training, please contact them in advance. We'll have some policies about substance abuse or use. liability waivers, which we'll update you on when you register and you get sent directions. There'll be a communal kitchen with enough taters, but bring extra food to share and snack on. Your children are welcome, but we will be over 45 minutes from stores and hospitals, so plan accordingly. Dogs are fine as long as they can handle the situation. And we're holding this camp in the spring so we can climb without interfering with the nesting marbled murrelets. They're also asking a $30 to $100 donation for the week per participant to help trainers out and to buy food and equipment. However, no one will be turned away for lack of funds. To register, go to ElliottClimbCamp2K16@gmail.com. That's ElliottClimbCamp2K16@gmail.com. And you can find further information about the climbing camp at the Earth First Journal Newswire. And now it's time for the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. The buffalo spring migration is underway west of Yellowstone's boundaries. Hundreds of matriarch-led buffalo families are making their way towards Horse Butte, the favored calving grounds of the central herd. In order to reach these birthing areas, they must first negotiate the dangerous U.S. Highway 191-287, which cuts right through their migration corridor between Yellowstone National Park and Horse Butte. This time of year is very difficult for the buffalo. Their fat stores, which aided them through the long, harsh winter, have been depleted. Most of the adult females are heavy with calves with yearlings at their side, which still require mother's milk. These buffalo moms are having to survive for more than themselves. This time between deep winter and late spring is an enormous challenge, and numerous buffalo will not make it. South-facing places and banks along rivers and creeks are the only places where buffalo can find any food. A thick layer of ice sits beneath the hard-packed snow, which still covers most of the ground, making it nearly impossible for buffalo to crater through to find life-giving grass. During this time of year, one of the only other places they are able to find food is along the preceding snowbanks of the plowed highway. One of the most direct ways we are able to help save buffalo lives is by warning more motorists along U.S. Highway 191-287 about the presence of buffalo by placing our hot pink warning signs where the buffalo are on or near the highway. Because we put the signs up only when buffalo are actually present, people pay attention when they see them. It's a critical community service we perform to help the buffalo make it safely across the road and also to prevent motorists from being injured. We have even the support of local law enforcement. The signs we use have been with us since 2007, when many of you generously answered our call to purchase them. But after nearly 10 years of intense use, these signs are beginning to fall apart. Without them, we cannot be nearly as safe or as effective. We are appealing to you to help us today to purchase new signs so we can continue to provide this service. These signs are expensive, about $500 each, yet they are priceless in the benefits they provide. Please consider making a secure online donation and specify highway signs in the comments section. Please go to www.buffalofieldcampaign.org to make that donation. Buffalo Field Campaign patrols have been extremely busy from dawn into the dark hours of night trying to help both buffalo and motorists avoid collisions. We have been hugely successful, yet there are sometimes people who choose not to heed the warning signs, especially at night when buffalo are hard to see. They are mostly brown and black. In the past 2 weeks, 5 buffalo have been struck and killed. For the volunteers who are on these shifts, it is extremely difficult because it's very easy for us to blame ourselves. While Buffalo Field Campaign's roadsides make a huge and positive impact, more needs to be done. One of the most important things that we can help to mitigate these buffalo vehicle collisions is the implementation of safe passage infrastructure, which involves constructing bridges or underpasses that buffalo and other wildlife like wolves, grizzly bears, moose, elk, and others can use to cross the most dangerous road sections without ever having to step foot on the asphalt. Examples of these enormous success safe passage has been for wildlife growing in the U.S., Canada, and other countries around the world. What better place for wildlife safe passage than on the edge of Yellowstone National Park? Please join the Buffalo Campaign in urging the state of Montana to provide wildlife safe passage in this key migration corridor. In the Gardner Basin along Yellowstone's northern boundary, buffalo are beginning to head south deeper into the park and away from the danger of Yellowstone's capture facility. The peril is not over until the close of business today, when Yellowstone will end bison capture operations for the remainder of the year. 57 orphaned buffalo calves remain in the trap, however. Their fate, life or death in prison, has yet to be determined by the Park Service. Yellowstone National Park's decision makers are failing wild buffalo by catering to the whims and threats of Montana's livestock industry. Their actions against the world's most important bison population are unforgivable and completely unnecessary. Their excuses are wearing thin, and thanks to your incredible dedication, we are getting closer to ending this war against wild buffalo. And if you'd like more information about the Buffalo Field Campaign, please go to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you want to send them a cash donation and don't want to use the internet, send your donation to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. That's Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, the zip code 59758. If you have any questions or if you're going to volunteer, please call the Buffalo Field Campaign before you go at 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild bison in the United States. And Oregon wolves are missing four of the Inmaha pack. This morning, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife shot and killed four members of the Inmaha pack, OR-4, OR-39, and two yearlings. The kill order was preceded by multiple depredations upon livestock in Wallowa County. Details of these depredations are still forthcoming, however. In advance of the decision, we released a statement declaring the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife should not be killing members of the Inmaha pack, or any wolves for that matter, while the wolf plan remains under review and out of date. Oregon's Wolf Management Plan, which provides guidelines for handling wolf and livestock conflicts, was supposed to be updated last year and could have provided more clarity to the agency and the public. However, instead of updating the plan as required by law, ODFW pursued the controversial delisting process. Oregon's Wolf Management Plan is now approaching its sixth month of delinquency. Lethal control of wolves ought not to be used until every practical measure to prevent conflict between livestock and wolves are employed. Tens of thousands of taxpayer dollars have been invested in non-lethal resources in Wallowa County alone. Hanging fladry, similar to little flags, penning sheep, removing carcasses, and positioning rag boxes are just a few of the proven effective non-lethal measures that should be applied generously to any livestock operation in wolf country before a kill order is considered. Killing wolves should not be taken lightly. The death of more animals, wolves, or livestock isn't in anyone's interest. It has been shown in scientific studies that killing wolves only leads to increased depredation upon livestock. For more background, I encourage you to go to Oregon Wild's website at www.oregonwild.org. OR-4 has played a significant role in the history of wolf recovery in Oregon. He sired OR-7 and numerous other dispersing wolves that have been critical in reestablishing a native predator in this landscape. In honor of OR-4 and his pack, the website Oregon Wild is sharing a video taken on July 23rd in the Wallowa-Whitman National Forest. For those of you who care about wolves, the last year has been difficult, but in the coming months, some of the most consequential decisions will be made. For wolf recovery to continue to be a success, we must not be disheartened. We must continue to be their voice for the wild. Lena Spadaccini, Wildlife Coordinator for Oregon Wild. And if you want more information, go to their webpage, www.oregonwild.org. And from the Center for Biological Diversity, they write, we've just learned that Wildlife Services, a division of the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife, the federal animal killing program, has been using Judas wolves to betray the location of wolf families in Idaho so that aerial shooters can wipe them out. It's a sick trick that shows how low these killers will sink to slaughter wildlife. and we need your help to stop them. A Judas wolf is one that's fitted with a radio collar and then used to repeatedly lead government killers back to the wolf's family. These wolves are then forced to watch their mates and pups get gunned down around them while they're left alive to lead the wolf killers to a new pack next season. Then, if they're lucky enough to eventually find a new mate and start a new family, the killers find them again and repeat the slaughter. Wildlife Services, operating behind the veil of secrecy and collusion with Idaho Governor Butch Otter and Idaho Fish and Game, is behind this perverse practice. The Centers for Biological Diversity is committed to stopping it. The Judas scheme, officially called Collaring for Later Control, uses unsuspecting wolves to betray family and friends over and over until they die or the batteries in the wolf collars run down. Wolves are intelligent, sensitive, social animals with strong family ties. Don't let Idaho and Wildlife Services use that against them. The Center for Biological Diversity has launched a full-on legal battle to end this. So if you need more information, please go to biologicaldiversity.org. That's biologicaldiversity.org for more information. And from the American Bird Conservancy, as found on the Earth First Newswire, we read about the 10 worst-cited wind energy projects. American Bird Conservancy has released a list of the 10 worst-cited existing and proposed commercial wind energy projects from perspective of the bird conservation. As the hunger for alternative energy grows, thousands of new wind energy projects are being planned and built, often without any regard for the serious risks they pose to birds and other wildlife. A leader in developing and supporting the concept of bird smart wind energy, the American Bird Conservancy identified these 10 poorly cited projects based on a number of factors, including whether they fall in areas considered to be of high risk to birds on ABC's wind risk assessment map. ABC also examined pre-construction risk studies and related information about these 10 sites to assess the potential for impacts to federally protected species and studied reports on post-construction mortality data where it was available. ABC supports Bird Smart Wind, and it is not our intention to criticize the concept of renewable wind development in general or the developers of specific projects included in the list, said Mike Parr, ABC Vice President and Chief Conservation Officer. Rather, this list is intended to demonstrate under the present voluntary guidelines, there is an inadequate system of checks and balances to protect America's native birds from poorly planned wind development on the large scale. These projects are illustrative of a much broader problem, Parr continued, and have been selected to illustrate a range of threats to birds in various regions and habitats, threats that are unfortunately widespread in the wind industry. The listed projects, 5 already built or approved and 5 proposed, are located throughout the United States in California, Hawaii, Kansas, Massachusetts, Missouri, New York, North Dakota, Texas, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Among these projects, like the Summit Repowering Project in Altamont Pass Wind Resource Area in Northern California, have a long history of causing bird death. Kauia on Hawaii is considered a top killer of endangered birds in spite of having conducted a pre-construction environmental risk assessment and implemented a habitat conservation plan. Another site, the proposed offshore Cape Wind project in Nantucket Sound, would be spread over a 24-square-mile area used by as many as 6 million migratory birds. All of the listed projects illustrate the risks of poor siting and the limitations of current mitigation strategies, many of which are still untested for their efficacy. The wind energy industry has long claimed that the notorious wind developments in Altamont Pass are an exception in their killing of large numbers of eagles and other birds, and that other wind projects should not be judged the same way, said Dr. Michael Hutchins, director of ABC's BirdSmart Wind Energy campaign. ABC's analysis shows that many wind projects kill birds, and not just eagles. Bird killing is more often the norm than the exception. And Poland has approved large-scale logging in Europe's last primeval forest in this story written by The Guardian as found in the Earth First Newswire. Poland has approved large-scale logging in Europe's last primeval woodland in a bid to combat beetle infestations despite protests from scientists, ecologists, and the European Union. The action in the Bialowiza forest is intended to fight the spread of the spruce bark beetle. We're acting to curb the degradation of important habitats, to curb the disappearance and migration of important species from this site, the Environment Minister John Sisko said. Sisko vowed that the logging plans would not apply to strictly protected areas of the primeval forest that was designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1979. But under the new plan, loggers would harvest more than 180,000 cubic meters of wood from other areas of the forest over a decade, dwarfing the previous plans to harvest 40,000 cubic meters over the same period. Vowing to protect the forest, Greenpeace accused Sisko of ignoring the voices of citizens and scientists, the European Commission, UNESCO, and conservation organizations, unquote. Along with other environmental groups protesting the move, Greenpeace also said the logging could trigger the European Union to launch punitive procedures against Poland for violating its Natura 2000 program. Sprawling across 150,000 hectares, roughly 300,000 acres, the Bialowiza forest reaches across the Polish border with Belarus, where it is entirely protected as a nature park. It is home to 20,000 animal species, including 250 types of birds and 62 species of mammals, among them Europe's largest, the European bison. Europe's tallest trees, firs towering over 50 meters high, about 170 feet, and oaks and ashes of 40 meters also flourish here in an ecosystem unspoiled for more than 10 millennia. And you can find further information on the Earth First News Wire. And Sunoco rapidly cuts trees on the Mariner East 2 pipeline in Pennsylvania, while two are arrested on $100,000 bail, and two are still in the trees. In this story published by Hudson Valley Earth First on March 30th, as found in the Earth First Newswire. Sunoco Logistics clear-cut trees on the Gearhart's family property in Huntington County to make way for the Mariner East 2 pipelines. Sunoco's claims to eminent domain are under appeal by the family and are currently being challenged by Clean Air Council. Yet Sunoco is seizing land across Pennsylvania for its for-profit pipelines that would ship gas overseas. Sunoco crews have been walking and cutting outside of the right-of-way and within close proximity to people observing their work. Sunoco still doesn't have the erosion or water crossing permits it needs, yet not only are crews cutting trees, they are cutting on steep slopes and into the stream bed and wetlands. Two people were arrested yesterday, one of Juanita College, who is alleged to have crossed into the claimed Mariner East 2 pipeline right away to warn crews that a tree that they were about to cut held a safety line for one of three tree-sitting protesters, and another protester who had been telling crews to stay in the right-of-way. Both were held on $100,000 bail for contempt of a judge's order. One of them has an additional charge of disorderly contact. Although Sunoco has already cut a lot of trees along the right-of-way on their property, there are still several areas that they have not cut and cannot, since there are people sitting in trees to prevent the felling. There are currently two tree sits on opposite sides of the property, holding down some mature oak and pine trees near wetlands, riparian areas, and woodland ecosystems. And for more information, go to the Earth First Newswire at www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And now let's turn to biological diversity news. The federal government has approved habitat destruction for endangered bats. Forest clearing by loggers, developers, and the energy industry, normally prohibited in endangered species habitat, will be allowed in the habitat of threatened northern long-eared bats under a final roof for bats issued previously by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Although the deadly disease for white nose syndrome is the primary cause of the species decline, ongoing forest loss and conversion are also serious threats to bats. Especially when bats are weakened by disease, they require intact habitat for feeding, but the rule allows businesses to continue as usual. Only minimal restrictions on land clearing have been approved. This rule does nothing to address the primary threat to the bat, white nose syndrome, and it allows virtually all the bats' habitat to be logged, mined, fracked, or paved over, said Tanya Sanarib, a senior attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. After a Center petition, northern long-eared bats were first proposed for endangered species in 2014, then downgraded to threatened last April, a change that allowed the service to give industry the loopholes for which they've lobbied so hard. And emergency safeguards have been sought for a stunning California flower. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies have petitioned for emergency protection for the Lassix lupin, a rare alpine flower in Northern California. The flower is found only in Humboldt and Trinity counties near Eureka in Northern California, with only 60 plants known on a range smaller than 4 acres. The gorgeous plant with silver-white foliage and bursts of pink flowers that stand out against the barren rocky slopes where it grows is threatened by climate change, altered fire regimes, and predation. Both the lupin's 2 remaining sites are ravaged by the Lassix fire in 2015 with an unknown number of surviving plants. Over the past 15 years, its range has shrunk due to progressively harsher conditions caused by decreasing rainfall, decreased snowpack, and increasing temperatures. As its environment has become hotter and drier, small mammals are preying more on the flower's seeds. The plight of this gorgeous mountain lupin highlights the need to take urgent action to protect ourselves and species from catastrophic climate change, said the center's Tierra Curry. And you can get more information about this issue or other issues of biological diversity at www.biologicaldiversity.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. You can hear the Earth First Update on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. You can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. That's Friday, 3 p.m. at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or you could listen to KRFP Radio Free Moscow, Idaho 90.3 FM at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays. Truth and Justice Radio in Boston, Massachusetts at WZBC 90.3 FM broadcasts the Earth First Update between 6 and 10 a.m. on Sundays. Internet radio station Grateful Dread Public Radio at gdprnashville.org broadcasts the Earth First Update Sundays at 2 a.m. And you can always go to radioforall.net, that's radio the number 4all.net, where you can listen live or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced by Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.